welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, James Kincaid. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. We are back from our little bit of an interlude, our sort of mid-season break, as Lucha Underground Season 3 still remains on its break. In our last episode, Lucha and Chill, we told you how we're sort of going to be resetting everything here while we wait for Lucha Underground Season 3 to return. So we are back with our first installment of the new format while we wait. And tonight we are going to be reviewing two documentaries about Lucha Libre. We are going to be reviewing Tales of Masked Men and Lucha Mexico. You can find both of these on Netflix to stream, and I think they both are excellent. So if you want to pause this podcast right now to sort of keep any of the surprise of what the documentary covers and whom it covers and everything like that, please feel free to do so. Then you can watch them both and sit in on the review as we talk about it and just sort of see, compare notes with us as far as how you felt about these documentaries. We're also going to touch briefly on WrestleMania tonight, which, of course, I mean, it is the biggest sports entertainment extravaganza there is, so we would be remiss if we didn't talk about it a little bit. But I've been looking forward to talking to you about these documentaries because I was so thrilled with both of them, in particular the Tales of Masked Men I thought was just so well constructed. But overall thoughts on both of them, Jeff?
I liked them both because they did a good job of kind of explaining the culture that's behind Lucha Libre, which I think is something that I really appreciate, and I know you do too.
Yeah.
The reason that – yeah, the lore, I suppose. And then, yeah, the Tales film was so good because it really highlighted specific talent, both past and present, and gave like kind of this in-depth look at what their careers were like and, you know, just sort of – Their relationship with the fans and everything like that, I really appreciated it. But I loved Lucha Mexico also because I really liked kind of getting a look at, like, the personal lives of, like, Shocker and everything like that. And then just some of the other things that he's doing besides wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I enjoyed both of them very much.
Yeah, they're both good.
When I first watched them, I watched them both on the same night. So they're both very much so, like, intertwined in my brain. Mm-hmm. As far as how I watch them, everything like that. Let's start with Tales of Masked Men. And, do you want to start with WrestleMania first?
Yeah, let's briefly mention WrestleMania, you know, just...
Okay.
Since Vince is a sponsor of the program, he owns us now, just like he owns everything else, so we have no choice but to talk about it.
Incorrect, but we are going to... We are going to start first with our little WrestleMania recap. So if you're uninterested in that, you can go ahead and fast forward to the part where we're talking about the documentaries. What did you think, Jeff? I thought it started off great. Like, I thought the first three or four matches were really excellent, including some of the ones on the pre-show, too, actually were quite good. Like, Austin Aries versus Neville I thought was very, very good. But I thought as the event went along, it sort of petered out. And it is, of course, speculated that it was The Undertaker's final match, which is why it main evented the show, Undertaker versus Roman Reigns. And spoiler, Roman Reigns was victorious, and Undertaker left his gear in the ring, so it led to the speculation that was, in fact, his last match, which, of course, sad, bittersweet, I'd say, for all wrestling fans. But he looked old he looked decidedly old, as sort of... as out of place as I've ever seen The Undertaker in the ring. And that was sad to see. That was not enjoyable. But what did you think about it?
No, this is exactly what it was like when I was texting you. I said that it started out strong and then it sort of, lost its way or fell apart a little bit towards the end. I didn't watch the pre-show matches because I didn't know what was going to be on the pre-show and everything like that. I really wish they wouldn't... basically build up the Andre the Giant Battle Royale and not have it make the main show.
Because I agree.
It's like, okay, if we're going to make this an annual thing, and I think that's fine. I think it's a cool event, and I think it did wonders for Baron Corbin's career over the past year. I think then it needs to have a place in the main show, especially because it turned out to be pretty awesome when I did check it out. As far as the matches, I thought... Well, the debut of the Hardy Boys, or I guess I should say their return, that was excellent. Yes. I was looking forward to that match anyway because I love tag team ladder matches, and it was going to be a three-way. I was going to root for Sheamus and Cesaro, but then when the Hardy Boys showed up, I had no choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was a great moment. I actually had a little bit of a heads up on that. I know somebody who knows a guy who said if the ladder match, if the ladder
inside information.
Yes, exactly. If the ladder stipulation got added to the match, that meant the Hardys were coming. And so I was sort of, I mean, I still popped for it, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But it was not as
much. Oh, they blew the roof off the place.
They did. It was great seeing Matt doing the delete pose and just looking still crazy as he walked down to the ring. But hearing their old music too was just great. And one of the things I thought about with that is it's awesome that they're back. It's awesome that they're tag team champions again. But the thing that got me the most is, I mean, I like both the Hardy Boys, but I've always been more of a Matt guy than Jeff. He's just my favorite member of the team. And I know I'm pretty much in the minority of that. However, this past year or so with the broken Matt Hardy gimmick, I mean, his popularity has gone to such heights. I was just sort of bemused that I was like, Matt Hardy, the Hardy Boys are back in the WWE, and Matt Hardy this time around is the most over member of the team. I was just like, that's awesome. Like, that's a first, and that's great. At this point in their career, I just think that's pretty cool that Matt's going to, you know, is sort of what led to this whole new shine for the Hardys. I think that's terrific. What was your favorite match of the night?
It definitely was the tag team ladder match, but I did like the battle royale for the Raw Women's Championship. I think those were two of my favorite matches.
Oh, you mean for the SmackDown one?
No. The
four-way.
Yeah, Oh, I'm sorry, I said battle royale. Yeah, I meant four-way. Yeah, the four-way. No, I thought the battle royale was a little, like, I don't know, sped up or something like that. Like,
yeah,
it just
felt rushed.
Yeah, it felt rushed. It also was very predictable. I mean, she had gotten injured. I knew she was going to have to get the title back as quickly as possible. And then also, I didn't even realize she was from Orlando, so.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. I really enjoyed the Raw Women's Championship Fatal 4-Way as well because my girl Bayley.
You did.
What?
I said, I'll bet you did.
I did. I loved Bayley's entrance and her ring attire sort of ode to Macho Man Randy Savage, including how she won. I was just thrilled with that. But I do think the absolute best match on the whole card was AJ Styles versus Shane McMahon. I thought they stole the show. I was so impressed with Shane and how he was able sort of to hang with AJ Styles. And I don't think it hurt Styles that Shane was able to do so because I thought they did it more or less in a way that made sense. I thought they tore the house down, and that was just a really great match.
I don't think it hurt AJ either. And I thought the match was fine. I thought it was the way it was being built up on SmackDown, I thought it was going to be a little later in the show than the opening match.
Oh, I was shocked that it was the opener.
Yeah, I so was I. But, yeah, I don't know. There were some parts that I thought kind of lagged a little bit. Overall, I mean, it was a good match, and I was excited for the rest of the pay-per-view at that point. But, I don't know, it didn't grab me as much as I wanted it to. And I don't need Shane fighting in every WrestleMania now.
What did you think of Goldberg and Brock Lesnar?
That went how I thought it would. And this was kind of the problem with building this match up as much as it was. I knew it wasn't going to be some great match. It was just a bunch of, you know, like thrill stunt, basically. Just, you know, them hitting their power moves over and over again. And it wasn't that long. It also went how it had to. It's not like Goldberg could keep the title. He's not staying as a full-time wrestler for the WWE. I don't look at this as like Brock has been vindicated or has gotten his revenge. It's like, okay, so Goldberg kicked your ass most of the time and you got him this last one. So what?
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying and it was enjoyable.
It's fine for what it is, but I don't know. Anybody who expected more from it though is a fool.
I kind of felt like a little bit that it was too much of an execution of Goldberg's character a little bit. Like, I mean, Brock can kick out of the jackhammer, but Goldberg can't kick out a 1F5 before you put him down with a second one. That's what I would have rather seen. You know, that's kind of splitting hairs, but I would have preferred to see Goldberg get in a little bit more. And also, like, to everyone online.
Yeah, but what about that Survivor Series match, though?
No, absolutely. I mean, but that, they totally like, played it off that Brock Lesnar had his back turned and Goldberg got lucky, you know? But so my thing is this, though, is like, and I enjoy Brock Lesnar. I really do. But people online that love Brock Lesnar and hate Goldberg don't make any sense to me because they are very similar in what they do, in particular this run. I mean, I think Brock can go back to, you know, I think when he first was on this dominating run, he didn't just do suplex, F5 kind of deal. It's almost like he's degenerated a little bit. So I don't get people that compliment Brock on one hand because, like, oh, he's just such a great attraction. I love seeing him do that. And then when Goldberg does the same thing, it's like, oh, well, this is stupid. It's the same thing that people are pissed when Goldberg beats a full-time talent, yet they are also decrying, well, Undertaker better not lose to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. It's like, yeah, well, he's not a full-time talent either. I hate to break it to you guys. So it's
yeah,
just,
but Undertaker's performance at WrestleMania is a little more iconic. Also, I think part of the reason of the breakdown in Brock Lesnar's performance is because over the past, 6 months now, he's had a feud with Goldberg. I don't think he can have a full match against him because Goldberg's not skilled or prepared for something like that. I think you are going to get better matches out of Brock Lesnar when he has different quality opponents.
I'll say I
nothing
hope
against
you're right.
Goldberg. I've always enjoyed Goldberg, and I don't like the WWE downplaying the powerhouse that was WCW for a while. But I mean, Goldberg was always just that sort of attraction.
Yes, but my point is that Brock Lesnar's recent Brock Lesnar's return to WWE has been Goldberg-esque, very much so. It has been. He's worked the same style of matches. They're fun to watch because they're just dominations. And there always has been that aspect in those kinds of characters. And they're enjoyable in their place. So that's my only thing, is that I do think there's a little bit of hypocrisy online about it. And the last thing we'll touch on is just your thoughts on the Undertaker-Roman Reigns match and everything, the fallout of that.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. Undertaker looked old. I think he's looked old for years now. And I always think about what Undertaker had said as far as he wanted to get out before people would say, oh, he should have left years ago. And I don't think he has. I kind of hope this is his last match. But at the same time, it's like, oh, boy, what an anticlimactic ending to that run.
Yeah.
I also think it's kind of an argument against letting Brock Lesnar beat him a few years back, because I don't really know what we got from that. And then I think it's weird that Undertaker continued to fight after he had lost. And okay, so now he's lost again. And then as far as this is like to kind of help warrant the Roman Reigns hatred, I don't care as much. And I would have rather like Roman Reigns had like really cheated or something like that. Instead, it just seemed like they fell into this and he sort of won. I wish he had made it really underhanded or crappy.
Yeah, no, I see
fully
that.
Fully embrace the screwing over the Undertaker.
I agree with that, and he should have embraced screwing over the Undertaker, not to screw the Undertaker, but to piss off the fans.
Exactly. If that's the point of Roman Reigns winning that match, which obviously at this point it is, then yeah, really, really channel the heel aspect of it.
Yeah. I agree, but I do think it's going to be good for Roman in the long run. I do think it's going to be very good for him because I don't think they're pulling any punches anymore that he is a heel. So, and I think that's good. I think on Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania, that was his Die Rocky Die night. The things that they were screaming at him and everything like that, he just saying, this is my yard now. He's a heel. That's all there is to it. That's what he is, and I think that's going to be great for him. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. I mean, big thank you, of course, to The Undertaker for all the many years that he put his body on the line for WWE and for all the fans and everything like that. I mean, just an incredible run for a big man and everything like that. So, and a gimmick like that. So, job well done. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, and that's the one thing that is sad about it is, boy, you know, it's a real end of an era. And whenever you look back on the streak and you hear the names of the people that he had faced off against, it just, you know, I mean, he's been wrestling for basically my entire span as a fan of professional wrestling. So it's kind of heartbreaking in that sense. And, you know, like he doesn't have any peers left in the locker room and hasn't for a while, as far as, you know, the guys that he was coming up with. And that is kind of strange, especially because though I am enjoying professional wrestling now and even the WWE, it's just not what it was. And, you know, his absence will be noted.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say before we do our little advertisement is I never was a fan of the streak. I thought the streak should have only been a plot device for Randy Orton to break it when they first brought up the streak. They fell ass backward into the streak. It was not a planned thing. How could it be? I never liked it. And I didn't like that it continued for so long. I thought it made Undertaker one-dimensional for a very long time. And they put him up against certain guys. It's like, well, there's no chance, or certain storylines. Well, there's no chance he's going to lose to that guy. So I honestly thought the streak was very limiting in a lot of ways. So
a little Shawn Michaels fanboy crying.
Yeah, I am. I thought that was stupid too.
Because I feel a guy who's got a streak like that is the true Mr. WrestleMania.
Well,
you'd be
the extreme minority because it's not going to be on the Undertaker's Hall of Fame bio. It's on Shawn Michaels' already Hall of Fame bio. So. You can suck it, but so anyway, yeah. Mr. Hall of Fame, Mr. WrestleMania should have beat Taker, but whatever. It, honestly, it should have been Randy Orton. Should have been the guy to end the streak. That would have solidified the Legend Killer.
Sting.
That would have solidified the Legend Killer gimmick as it was going on. It would have made him even more. I mean, Randy Orton's had an incredible career, but that's where it should have gone down. I will believe that forever. But big thank you to the Undertaker, a legend. And one of the most respected guys to ever do it. With that, though, let's take a little break. This is our time to say thank you to all of the listeners of Lucha Lowdown. We appreciate all of you listening, downloading. The best thing you can do for us is rate and review us on iTunes. Subscribe to us on there as well, and Audio Boom. And tell your friends. Tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best way to get the word out about this podcast. We know the wrestling fans are a tight-knit community. Follow us at Lucha Lowdown on Twitter. Interact with us there. When new episodes start coming out, I'm going to be live tweeting more of the episodes and everything like that. I love interacting with you in that regard on there. That's a lot of fun. LuchaLowdown@gmail.com. If you want to email us any thoughts or questions, if you want to email us your own reviews or just thoughts on how we talk about these documentaries here now in the next few minutes, do that as well. We certainly do appreciate you. And then the last plug that I have is that if you are in California, or I mean, if you're planning on seeking out more independent professional wrestling, All Pro Wrestling in San Francisco, Saturday, May 6th, is the Cow Palace Royale. It is the first time an independent wrestling promotion is going to the Cow Palace in 35 years, and they are putting on a monster card with a lot of the stars of Lucha Underground. Joey Ryan is going to be in the main event in a steel cage against Cody Rhodes. Johnny Mundo, Jeff Cobb, and Cage are in a three-way dance, and there's just a glut of other talent that is involved as well. X-Pac, who's retiring very soon, Chris Masters is going to be there. Just tons and tons of talent. They're going to put on an A-plus show. I've been going to APW for years now, and this is going to be their biggest show to date. So if you are in the area Saturday, May 6th, come out to All Pro Wrestling. You can check out also... Just to plug us, the other shows I do on 107.7 The Bone, we've been interviewing wrestlers. We talked to AJ Lee this week. We talked to Bailey and Enzo and Cass last week. We talked to one of the managers who is going to be at the Cow Palace Royale, Caesar Black, this week as well. So check out all of those, 107.7thebone.com. With that is going to do it for this little bit of advertising here. Let's segue now into the first documentary that we're talking about tonight, and that is Tales of Masked Men. I really, like I said about this one, I think the setup of this one was so well focused. They start you out with history of Lucha Libre in Mexico, which I loved getting that background on Lucha Libre's roots and everything like that. And they did about 15 minutes of like giving you background of Lucha Libre, how different people felt about Lucha Libre in, you know, Mexican culture and everything like that, and sort of how it became more ingrained in it. And then it transitioned into the first tale, which was El Santos. What did you think about sort of like just the structure of this one?
I do agree that the structure kind of gave the information in it presented the information in a better way than the other film. I thought both documentaries were great as well. I enjoyed the highlight on the history of it as far as when it first sort of became a business in Mexico and its success, and then also, yeah, how it was looked at culturally. And even the socioeconomically, which groups of the population kind of thrive towards it. I enjoyed it because, one, I like listening to the history of things like Lucha Libre, and then I also like comparing it to what I know of professional wrestling in the United States, our home. And, I mean, the parallels are, you know, are all there. It's so funny. A wrestling fan really isn't that different no matter where you are in the world. And I also like that they touched on how popular Lucha Libre is in the United States and Japan. There are certain countries I feel that just really have gravitated towards professional wrestling. And I like that we all appreciate each other's styles as well.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. So the first tale they went into, and I do like this also, they picked three luchadors to highlight in this. And there's like three very distinct reasons why they did this. El Santo, of course, is one of the most iconic. He's a Mexican national treasure, and they go into that quite a lot. And I enjoyed learning even more about him than I already knew. Just his backstory, how many failed gimmicks he had to go through until he became El Santo. The fact that he was actually a Rudo before, for a good portion of his career before he became a Technico and everything like that, and that. I mean, this was something I already knew, but not to the extent that he was in all these movies and everything like that that sort of springboarded him into being a Technico. But, I mean, he was an international superstar. I mean, he was like the Rock before the Rock kind of deal. What did you think about El Santo's story?
I love the story. I also never knew that he was a Rudo. I wouldn't say that I knew that much as far as, like, his wrestling career, but it's definitely a name you know. It's one of the masks and costumes that you recognize immediately. And I'll touch on this just really fast because I think Shocker mentioned it in the other film, and I completely agree. The simpler the design, the more memorable the luchador mask is. And yeah. I think he's absolutely right. All of the greats have very simple masks, whether it's El Santo or Blue Demon. And I think that was a great point to make, and that's why he wanted his to be simple too when he was talking about starting out. I was blown away by how many movies a year he was making. It was worse than comic book movies today. You know what I mean? As far as they were just churning them out.
Dude, it was old Hollywood or whatever. I mean,
it was just assembly line business like, and it was awesome. It was like the Three Amigos film.
The clip
just
of
keep making them.
Yeah, the clip of him like just like waving the cross at like those lady vampires. Yeah, dude, I thought that was awesome. Like it made me excited to review, you know, some of his movies and Blue Demon's movies moving forward. Just like those look like they're going to be a lot of fun to watch.
I love it because it's so perfect as far as all the cross promotion. You know, when you think about it, that, yeah, the character transcends what he originally is. It's not just the wrestling aspect. It's the films. And I can only imagine what other, you know, sort of merchandise you could get. It does make them larger than life. And I know they were described multiple times as, you know, like superheroes, which they are.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of cool seeing him in the film, or in the scenes from the film, you know, walking around with his cape and his wrestling outfit and just, yeah, beating up bad guys. I liked when he was tied to the slab and just kind of undid.
Dude,
how he untied himself.
Santo strength,
sort of,
bro.
Sort of rolled off and walked away.
He's got that El Santo strength.
Walk. Yeah, clearly. Well, yeah, I mean, he's got the power of God on his side against a bunch of vampires. You better believe he's going to win.
Yeah, absolutely. What I think I took away most from this, though, is, again, it's that national treasure aspect of him, just how ingrained into the national consciousness he was. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. like, this guy is a Mexican hero. And not just, but, and like, he's a Latin hero as well, you know, I mean, internationally, but the shots from his funeral, like the photos from his funeral with all the people just the surrounding his casket as it was being carried was incredible. Those were some really stirring images, I thought, and that was, I thought they shined such a good light on him. So it was, I was like, well, I love this documentary. This is awesome. And, you know, and from there, so that, like, the cool thing they do about this is the transitions are great too, because, you know, they segue out of El Santo and then they talk about like another aspect of Lucha Libre and everything like that. They start talking about how, you know, like little people got involved, and then that takes us right into our next tale, which is of Lucha Underground's very own Masquerita Sagrada, which I did not know he was going to be heavily featured in this. And look, I like Mascarita Sagrada before this documentary. I like him a lot more now. I think hearing him speak about everything that he went through in his life, how he dreamed about being a wrestler eventually, how at first he thought it was just, you know, for like poor street performers or for the uneducated and stuff like that, and how he's really into kung fu at first and everything. I thought he told such a great story. I thought his outlook on life was so good too. Like when he told the story about the teacher sort of not letting him use his height disadvantage as a crutch, you know, that is, you know, the story about him having to get the things off the tall shelf, having to figure that out. I thought it was beautifully done. And I mean, I'm a much bigger Mascarita Sagrada fan now having watched this than coming in. How do you feel about that?
I think documentaries like this are a great way to showcase different performers. I found his honesty very refreshing, like you said, as far as what his attitude towards wrestling was before he started doing it. I enjoyed that story about the teacher, too. Basically, what he was saying is you don't know your limitations unless you attempt something. You know, so he could just say, I won't be able to wrestle, and never attempts it. And then, yeah, he'll never be able to wrestle. But if he tries to wrestle... One thing I liked and what I think won him over as far as wrestling goes was they showcased in this documentary how much work goes into being a luchador and how many years of training and just, you know, it's more than a full-time job, really. It's exhausting. And that's why I think so many people, you know, basically get weeded out. So I loved all of the shots of the training and things like that. And then as far as even just not Mascarita, but little people wrestlers in total, I understand from that community and even from other people that, you know, complaints of exploitation. But if you look at someone like Mascarita Sagrada, what is he doing that's different than any other professional wrestler? He's not the joke of anything. He doesn't have some sort of a goofy gimmick or costume. He's like any other performer. He's just smaller. And it lends itself so perfectly to an in-story match. I mean, it's from the Bible, David versus Goliath. We're always going to root for that underdog. I love the one shot of the one Rudo who was like comparing his height to him when the two of them were just kind of facing off in the middle of the match. That's what it could always be. And then when the children were flocking around him as he was going ready to go to one of his matches, how exciting is it to see one of the performers is basically your size? You know, I can so see them probably imagining themselves as him in the ring. So I enjoyed all of that. I thought it was great. I liked the interview with him and one of his old mentors.
Yeah.
And the two of them just sort of joking around. I thought that was a cool conversation. But yeah, overall, I thought this highlight section was great, especially because we know Mascarita. We get to watch him on a regular basis on Lucha Underground. So it was cool getting to know him better.
Well, I completely agree. And I think one of the other things that I really like that they showcased here is how popular they are in Mexico, in traditional Lucha Libre, that their role is not just some joke or anything like that. Like, there's aspects of that no matter how big you are in wrestling and stuff like that. But no, the little people wrestling, they talk about how insanely popular they are and everything like that. And so that I thought that was great to see that, like, dude, Mascarita Sagrada is a freaking wrestling superstar. Like, he's famous. Like, he is well-respected.
Yeah, a huge deal, yeah.
Yeah, and I really liked one of the people that they interviewed heavily for this. You know, he was talking about how, you know, they go through the same training as normal-sized wrestlers. They have to work just as hard, if not harder, so that they should be viewed as professionals like they are. And I just... So I thought this was a very good highlight of everything in that aspect of Lucha Libre. So good on Mascarita Sagrada, because like I said, I'm an even bigger fan now. Just like you said, how candid he was, and I just think his outlook on it is just awesome. So that was terrific. And then the final tale that this one got us into is about the aspect of sort of like carrying on your legacy in Lucha Libre. So they followed around Solar and Solar Jr. What did you think about this one?
I liked it because I liked how they were describing Solar, that he was one of the last like living legends, still performing today, that he was a part of that silver age. But I mean, like his wife was saying, you know, nobody lasts forever and the injuries catch up with you. And, you know, it's going to be time to retire at some point. And then I loved seeing him and his son getting ready to go to a show, and the two of them just saying goodbye to his wife, and then just getting in the car together. And I think that's another thing I like about Lucha Libre, is because of the mask endures. So you can carry on the same characters and personas as long as there's someone willing to keep the torch going. So I'm hoping that is the case. I'm hoping his son does continue with it and becomes, he is already Solar Jr. and continues to do that. Yeah, I think I ran out of steam there. I think that's basically what I wanted to say.
I agree. I do like, I love the legacy aspect of Lucha Libre as well. And I really liked Solar a lot. I felt so bad for him that his, you know, that sort of like his Lucha at First Sight with El Solitario, he ended up teaming with him, but then he died shortly thereafter on the operating table because he was wrestling injured and had internal bleeding. I thought that was very sad. One of the things that jumped out to me about this, though, is as they were traveling, it mentioned that, you know, you'll find a lot of like small arenas like this all throughout Mexico. That looked like a pretty badass like arena just to be in like some random place in Mexico, you know, like that was actually a pretty cool venue, I thought, at least, to take in some wrestling. So that was one thing, is I was like, man, this is like so culturally accepted.
I was going to say, it shows how just ingrained it is in the culture, and how that's one of the difference between that and how it is in America. I mean, in America, it's beloved for sure, but at the same time, you're not going to get something like that. We don't just have wrestling rings in certain places so that we can have performers come on a regular basis.
I think that's so cool.
I think it's awesome. I wish we did have more stuff like that. And then I was going to say, from the legacy aspect, that's just the nature of the business. Dynasties and families, if you're a part of a wrestling family, chances are you're at least going to dabble in it. And I love that. I love the idea of, you know, talking about wrestling with my father, and that he was a fan of someone's dad or even someone's grandfather growing up, you know, versus who I'm a fan of. And then it reminds me of the anime Ultima Lucha or Muscle, which I think is the first one, which basically goes right into that. And it borrows heavily from both American and Mexican wrestling tropes, and even has characters that are inspired by actual performers. And yeah, it talks about the different generations, and, you know, just how feuds carry over and everything like that too. And then just the fandom. I really enjoyed this. This was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, no, it was terrific. I think that, and then that pretty much is how it wrapped up. It did a nice little sort of, postscript on Lucha Libre and everything like that. And then, that was it. I wanted more. I would love like a sequel to this where they told some more stories. But I mean, it's just terrific as a standalone piece as well. We'll rate them both at the end here.
I said Ultima Lucha. I meant Ultimate Muscle.
Sorry. Yeah, no, you caught yourself.
I had Lucha Underground on my head. Yeah. No, but Ultimate Muscle and Muscle are still two different things as well, where it goes into the second generation afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's fun.
The next documentary was Lucha Mexico, which it covers a lot of similar ground, as you'd imagine, because it's a documentary about Lucha Libre. But this one was, I do feel like, very much so distinctly different as well. This one is a little darker. Like, it is presented, I think, less from sort of maybe it's showcasing the cultural impact of Lucha Libre, and more just, it's highlighting some people, but it's also showing like maybe some of the pitfalls a little bit more of the pro wrestling lifestyle and everything like that, and what they go through. I don't know if you got that sort of feel from this.
It definitely was a little darker just because it talked about how dangerous the sport this is.
And there's multiple deaths involved in this one,
too. Yeah. And I mean, it's jarring because it just sort of happens. And I mean, that's the nature of the business. That's why I always get so frustrated when, you know, you hear fake and then people just think it's almost like watching a movie. And it's like, no, these people are putting their bodies and their well-being on the line on a consistent basis, just thinking about how much they perform. This one, I would say it was more what's going on right now with these performers, as opposed to going over the entire history of Lucha Libre.
And
as
it
well.
Is more recent. I mean, this came out in 2016.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, and it, so it does, it deals with the death of El Hijo de Paraguayo. It deals with, you know, Gitano, he committed suicide. And it, he's one of the ones that they heavily featured in this film. And I actually didn't know that. And so, you know, he loses that mask versus mask match. And then sort of the next time you hear about him is that I think it was John Strongman Anderson got a call that he was dead. And I was not expecting that. That, I mean, that hit me like right between the eyes. Like, and that made me really sad. It's like, did he think that his career, like he could not continue a wrestling career without his mask? You know, and he talked about how he had to leave Lucha Libre for a little while. He became a Chippendales dancer and all this stuff. And it just, I mean, that was crushing to watch. So, yeah, there was definitely some low points, like just emotionally in this movie. However, not to get too down, I loved falling around Shocker. 1000% Guapo is his moniker. And I, of course, thought of you, El Guapo, Jeff Budd. I was like, holy crap, this guy's Jeff, dude. I was like, you're 1000% Guapo, Jeff. In my heart, you're 1000% Guapo.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Can't put a mask on this.
That's right. Well, he used to wear a mask.
And he's the one who talked about, you know, make it a simple design. That's what makes it memorable. I love the masked wrestlers more. I love the masks. I love that style. I thought he was great. I loved his interactions with the fans.
Yeah.
And then I liked his side business, his little small restaurant that he had, which I just think is smart. You can't just be doing wrestling only. And I would love to go to a place like that, you know, and just see him running errands and, you know, or mopping up afterwards and stuff. I it would be so great to just like run into him.
Yeah, I enjoyed that too. I mean, he's like, he's famous enough to where it's like, I was thinking about, like, I grew up in Monterey and I know they're all over the place. They're up in the Bay Area too. Like Willie McCovey has a restaurant, but like Reggie Jackson's Dugout Diner opened up in Monterey. So to me, it was like one of those things. It's like, it's a famous athlete that opens up, you know, just one of those restaurants that they want to get into, like after their career starts winding down and everything like that. So,
yeah, exactly. In San Diego, we had Seiya's before he had passed away. Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of thing, I enjoyed that as well. This one, I think you sort of hinted on a little bit, is that it didn't follow around. Like, I love the masked aspect of Lucha Libre, and this one didn't have as much of that, I feel like, in it, because two of the main ones that they're following around are John Strongman Anderson and Shocker, who had lost his mask. I loved going through Shocker's past, like when he went through the memorabilia in his home and everything like that.
That room was great. Yeah, with all the pants and everything and telling all the stories.
One of the standout moments for me, this, I love that Blue Demon Jr. is so involved in this one. That was cool because he would have fit right in with Tales of Masked Men. I liked they were showcasing, you know, the original Blue Demon's film career and how in that one movie they used the movie to give Blue Demon essentially his plausible backstory for why he's a demon. I mean, how cool is that?
I thought, what a phenomenal idea. Rather than it's just a cool sounding name, it talked about his demonic background, basically.
Yeah, the devil trapped his soul and everything. Like, ah, it's just, I thought that was great. I totally popped for that. And the other thing about Blue Demon Jr., his story, he talked about how he felt like the life of a luchador is very lonely, and that how in a day, you know, he'll be wearing the mask for like 16 hours a day or whatever it was that he said, or 18, I forget.
Yeah, he said 18. Wear it until you love it. All right. That's you know what? It's something I didn't consider, but then after he said it, it's like, yeah, I can understand that feeling
it's
alienating.
So, it's so
and
serious.
Also, it is. And see, I always thought of it as something that could be so liberating, because I was like, oh, and then after the show, you just get the heck out of there and nobody knows what you look like because you're always in the mask. But it's like, no, he needs to have a public persona as Blue Demon Jr. as well. So it's him wearing the mask and leaving. And then, like he said, you know, don't film me and show where I live, or else, you know, we'll be bombarded by fans as well. And I also enjoyed his backstory when he was talking about how he was reluctant to get into the business. That it wasn't something that he wanted to do at first. He didn't want to follow in his father's footsteps. And then you know, he kind of slowly embraced it and then, of course, then appreciated it.
Yeah, and I think...
Very real.
I think it might be even harder for them now with the masks. Like, I think there's probably a relaxation in how serious it's taken. Mm-hmm. But if you're a traditionalist and you want to carry that on, it's harder because of everyone has a camera phone now. It's harder to have your anonymity. So it's harder to sort of fade away, you know, it's like sort of, you know, Clark Kent change back into costume or change out of costume rather, and then go about your day. You know, it's much harder. So I feel for him on that. I thought that was a very eye-opening aspect of that. What else stood out about this one in particular to you, Jeff?
I liked Kitano. What was funny about Kitano is when they first introduced him, I was thinking he's one of the guys who I thought had the right of it as far as owning that gym. And, you know, sort of I thought that was a great investment and a good way to, like, kind of establish yourself. And he seemed to be somebody who really had things going on well in his life. And then also when it went into the mask versus mask match, you kind of got to see the consequences and darker side of it, but just how serious and important that is as far as their persona goes. And I mean, it completely shakes up your career. And then also, you know, by extension, your life.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was very upsetting what had happened. And I wish that was not the case, especially because then when they were showing him without the mask, I was thinking I could definitely see this guy just going over as now an unmasked wrestler. And I thought he had a good look and everything. And you don't know everything else that's going on in the man's life, you know, and
yeah, of course.
And why he chose that decision, which is unfortunate. But I can understand is that, you know, sort of being one of the lightning rods or sort of focal points as far as, you know, where things sort of took a turn for him. So as terrible as it was to watch that, at the same time, I thought it was really important and one of the more interesting parts of the documentary.
Yeah, no, I agree. And also, I mean, again, another one of the sadder parts was the death of Perro Aguayo. I mean, the Perros del Mal, which was, you know, Pentagon was in that stable with him. I mean, they're like the D-Generation X, you know, they're insanely popular in Mexico and throughout the world. I mean, that was a titanic blow in Lucha Libre. I mean, it was such a tragedy. He was so young. And so I'm glad. I mean, I'm not glad about any of it, but I mean, I do think it's important to highlight that. And I mean, just, you know, even though he was so young, I mean, his legacy was so great. And I mean, he really was just giving it all out there for the fans. So that was very sad, but I think it was worthy of highlighting.
And I think it's important to show these things as far as, you know, how quickly something could take a turn. It was kind of like when they were showing the arena in the beginning of the film, I think, and they were highlighting different places where people had died while performing. And I mean, that's eerie, but at the same time, it's realistic. It's incredibly dangerous what they do, and they're doing it day in and day out for the fans. And, you know, it's a very typical match. And then all of a sudden, you know, that one thing goes wrong.
Yeah. All right. I think that is just going to about do it for our reviews of Tales of Masked Men and Lucha Mexico. I give Tales of Masked Men 4.5 broken arms. And I give Lucha Mexico, I give that 4 broken arms. Jeff, how do you rate these two?
Well, on Netflix, I gave them both 3 out of 5 stars. As far as
it sounds like convert to whatever rating system you're gonna have here.
Yeah,
do you have like Mundo's abs? Yeah, or is abs gonna be a rating
giving
system?
I'm giving them 3 out of 5 Aztec medallions.
Ooh, even better. I like that quite a bit. Ooh, you trumped me there, sir. Very good. Well, we are gonna figure out what we're doing next here at Lucha Lowdown in terms as far as us. You know, waiting for Lucha Underground Season 3 to end their break. But we're either going to do one of our sort of a best of character highlight episode, or we might watch one of Blue Demon or El Santo's movies and review those. But we will keep you updated. We're not going away for long. We're going to keep these going for you. This was a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to doing more stuff like this in the interim as we wait for Lucha Underground Season 3 to come back. But with that, that is going to do it for us this week here at Lucha Lowdown. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.